Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello everyone, welcome to part two of the Stompcast. Jason and I are wandering in the common. We've got a load of cricketers coming to wander by.
They've been out. Small cricketers at that?
Small cricketers, yeah.
I was like, I didn't know what was going on. I was like, there's loads of kids dressed in white.
They're all in their whites, looking very smart. They've had a game of cricket, enjoying the sunshine and so on. And we're just meandering through Clapham. Thank you so much for joining me again. No, I appreciate it. You mentioned earlier in part one about difficulties you've had with mental health, and you mentioned PTSD, so post-traumatic stress disorder, which was discovered as in the military and by people that have been away in wars and so on, as described as like a psychological and emotional response to a trauma, so that post-traumatic stress. Yeah. We now know that actually people who've experienced PTSD, you can see physiological or physical changes in the brain when you scan the brain, because of that kind of reaction, that literal cellular reaction that people have to a trauma, a singular event or compounding events that cause this reaction. So I wonder if you could share a little bit, I mean, you joined the military young, a little bit about, yeah, the kind of work you did as a soldier in terms of what you were doing, what that kind of life looked like, and then perhaps a little bit of like, yeah, when did you realise that there has been this effect?
So
when did you realise that?
So I joined at 16. I spent the first half of my military career in the Marines, and I didn't actually see, well, pretty much any combat, really. I spent that first 10 years learning how to soldier, traveling the world, getting drunk and playing loads of sport, and it was awesome. But I was starting to get a little bit stale, frustrated. And I loved soldiering, but I didn't know whether I wanted to stay in the conventional military because I wasn't from finding it fulfilling. So in 2001, I put in for Special Forces selection, went on it, passed, and then in 2002...
You make that sound so casual, like, yeah, I went on it and passed. It's literally
it was difficult. An absolute epic, yeah. But it was a grind, got it done.
And again, you're so humble. I mean, could you give just a bit of a picture? Obviously, you know, you do the show, the SAS Who Dares Wins, but just an idea of actual what SAS selection looks like. Because I've read, you know, quite a few books on kind of the, and it blows my mind the level you have to be at. And you're all people that go, when you go for SAS selection, from my understanding, I'm sure you'll explain it, you're all unbelievably fit, unbelievably strong, unbelievable everything. And it's whittled down, isn't it, from all these people, these unbelievable tasks to a few people that get through. So yeah, perhaps you could explain what is it like.
So I put in for the course, and that's all you do. Everyone's like, how'd you get selected? Like, I just filled out a form. And then they literally load you onto a course. And weirdly, the course I was on was a big course. I think it was like 350 guys started. They'd tried a super course or whatever they want to call it. There's normally probably 100 less than that.
So a couple hundred people, they start. A
few hundred people. You turn up day one, get a brief, and you then know what the detail is for the following day, and you get a load of kit. Pack your Bergen, your rucksack. Make sure it's the correct weight. It will get weighed. And then you're just literally, for the first phase, doing arduous route marches, which sounds a bit odd. It's just hiking with heavy weight in the weapon.
How heavy are we talking?
Well, it builds up. So you start, the first thing you do is a CFT, which is a combat fitness test, which is 8 miles, running and walking over very undulating ground, carrying 45 pounds, I think, in a gun.
20 plus kilos, yeah, that's decent, that.
And then it builds up, and you, that's your first, you have day one, you've got to pass it.
Yeah.
If you don't, you get kicked off.
Yeah.
Then you do a load of stuff that week, which isn't critical, unless, of course, you're just an absolute idiot. And then at the end of the first week, you've got the second criteria test, which is the fan dance, which is 26 kilometres over the penny fan, carrying 65 pounds, I think it is. then you've
that's,
got...
That's quite, like, well-known, isn't it?
Yeah,
that, everyone knows about that one.
Then you've got week two, going out in small, in pairs, pairs by this stage, you're in pairs, and it's all about navigation and being resilient enough to carry all that equipment and do it in times as well. All the marches are timed.
Yeah.
Again, not criteria, but
is it straight? If you don't make that time, you're out, right?
Yeah, but that's on the test. The second week, none of it's criteria. Mm-hmm. But they are watching you as an individual. Third week is pre-test week, and normally they're really knuckling into you now. Longer distances, slightly heavier weight, and if you're too far off the times, they'll tin you off then. And then the fourth week, test week, is just relentless. It's like every day, long march, you got to pass it. You can fail one test march on test week,
right,
but second red and you're gone. But it culminates in the final test, which is called endurance. And even if you haven't had any red cards, so you're clean, you can't fail that.
You have to
pass it. And that's I think you end up doing about 70 kilometres carrying like 85 pounds, something like that. It's emotional.
Is it is it a bigger mental or physical challenge? What tends to take people? Is it the mind or what gives in?
I mean, the body does give in. Everyone will pick up an injury of some description, a niggle, and some people allow them to take that, for that to then take charge of themselves, play on their mind, and they'll take themselves off the course. Or the injury could be really bad and they just can't make the times.
How many people generally get through at the final to pass SS?
We got to the end of that phase and we had 60 people left.
Out of like 300?
Yeah, then we went to the jungle, came back after that phase and we had 10 left, and then we ended with 8.
That's who got in, the 8?
Yeah, 8. We had a couple of guys failed another phase later on, which was actually normally unheard of, but they made a couple of mistakes and they failed that. So we ended up with 8 people, I think it was, yeah.
What does the jungle stage involve? What do you enjoy?
Jungles, I mean, that is selection. That's where you go out, you're in the jungle, you're living in the jungle for 4 weeks. You go out a week before, do acclimatization, a load of range work, so, you know, shooting guns and stuff. And then you go into the jungle and you're tested on everything. Your ability to operate in small teams, your weapon skills have to be absolutely, like, your how safe you are with a weapon is, like, that's the be-all and end-all.
Right.
And then also your navigation is on another level in the jungle. You micro-navigate because you can't see anything.
So navigation in a jungle doesn't sound too easy.
And then ultimately, your personal admin is the most important thing, keeping yourself clean and in a good state, because if you don't, you'll go down. You'll end up going down with something and potentially dying. People are always getting heat exhaustion because they're not looking after themselves properly. They're not taking on enough water, so they'll get dehydrated. And yeah, you're constantly, and they are listening to you all the time. You'll be in an evening, you'll be back at your little patrol, what we call a patrol harbour, where you've got like 4 hammocks set up. You've got like a bench in the middle, you'll make it. That's where you sit and you sort of like write out all your patrol reports, make cups of tea, make your food, and you're with these guys and you'll be chatting. And you could be saying anything. You could be slagging off someone in another patrol because you don't like him, slagging off one of the instructors.
And they're listening down.
And then you'll be chatting away for like, I don't know, 40 odd minutes, and then all of a sudden someone will appear from behind a bush. It'll be one of the instructors, and they'll just be like, ah, interesting chat, lads. And then they just wander off, and you're like,
oh my God.
What
gosh.
Did we say? Hang on a minute, do you reckon he heard that? Oh no.
God, how do you keep your head together 4 weeks? Just imagining being in a jungle for 4 weeks, let alone you're being assessed, you're actually doing stuff that's under pressure. How do you keep your head together in that 4 weeks? How do you prevent it all kind of going on top of you?
Like, take every day as it comes at you, chip away at it, but just constantly. Like, I didn't have an out. If I didn't pass that course, I was leaving the military, and I didn't know what I was doing after that.
So that sharp.
I gave myself no out. I was like, I've got to. You'll pick up a bollocking on the course, and it's the biggest thing in the world. If you get a bollocking, you're like, that's it, they're going to fail me, you know, and what do they think of me, you know. And half the time they're throwing out the bollockings and picking you up on certain things because they just want to see how you bounce back from it, from how you react. So the key is to keep yourself sort of focused on the end game. I mean, the amount of times a lot of guys will give up, they'll voluntary withdraw off the course, and they'll be like, "What? Why do you go?" And they're like that, because I knew I wasn't doing good enough. And they'll be like that, you were on for a pass, but once you've taken, sure. That's it. Because they see it as a chink, I suppose, in your armour.
So when you look back at that time and doing SAS selection, what benefit or what did you take away from it? You think that you learned as a lesson or experience?
It taught me that I can cuff anything. I can wing it. No. There is an element of that, actually.
But in a sense, I guess it taught you can do anything, right?
I got a lot of confidence from it, yeah. I got the confidence in myself to realise that with the right application, you can pretty much achieve anything. Because, I mean, I still sit down with the lads I served with, and we still look back at that time like, how the hell did we do that? And then the stuff that you do when you're in is just on another level. You're like, how did we do that? And it's like, I don't know, we just winged it, didn't we? It's like, well, we didn't, but, you know, sometimes it was.
I guess you're calling almost talking a little bit about imposter syndrome, really, isn't it? But then how do you combat imposter syndrome is doing it.
I'm an imposter now, I feel, but I don't get that syndrome. When I was in the military, I always had imposter syndrome.
Really?
Even though I'd passed all these courses, I kept thinking, I'm going to trip up. I know it, and then you go on another course, like a command course, and you know, you pass it, you do well, you come in the top, you know, in the top 5% of a course, and then you come back and you're like, oh, I'm an imposter. And I look back on it now and I'm like, why did I feel like that? When that was my chosen profession.
Yeah.
Like,
and you clearly were not
an imposter.
I'm just literally
an imposter, like you wouldn't believe.
No, but you're not. And in a way, though, aren't you? That's good that you're not feeling. But you're not. But isn't that strange that whatever you move on to, you're always like, but I wasn't then, but I am now. It's often, we always view it that way. It's almost like what's been, it's past.
Yeah, but now I do a bit of work into. I'm not a telly person.
You are.
And yet people are like.
You are. Yeah. You're one of the biggest shows in the country and across the world. And you're fantastic at it, I must say. So
sometimes.
So what would you actually say then, if you're going to say to someone who, you know, you did a very difficult thing, obviously, which is an incredible feat to achieve. What would you say to other people who, like, whatever they're doing in life, that feel a bit like imposters? Like, how do you encourage someone to kind of...
The way I see it now is there's no point feeling like you're an imposter. We're all on this planet at the same time, and we're all sort of winging it to a certain degree. And if you choose to do something, the minute you choose to do it, you're not an imposter. You've bought into it. And I think that's how I think now about things. Like, someone will ask me, do you want to go and do this? And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm going to give that a go. And the minute I say that, I'm like, well, I'm not an imposter because I already embraced it. I want to give it a go.
Yeah.
And I'm going to learn a little bit about it, obviously, so I feel less of an imposter. But I think, I just don't see, I find, it's weird because I felt it all the time, but now I find it weird that there is such a thing and that people get it.
And also, I guess, no matter who you are, how like much you've been doing something for a long time, you're never going to be perfect. And there's always a chance you make a mistake anyway.
Exactly,
so you're always a chance that you're going to be not found out, but you're going to make a mistake, which is human, which is normal.
It benefits you, I think, the mistake.
Failure.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Now, I guess when you know you've gone into the role of being an SAS soldier, you're going to the battlefield now. I mean, without going into details of things that you experienced and so on, what effect has that had on your mental health and your life? And yeah, perhaps we could talk a bit about PTSD and your experience.
So, realistically, it wasn't necessarily my combat experience that had given me my mental health issues. So. I've got or had complex PTSD because I always, correct me if I'm wrong, when it comes to PTSD, like post-traumatic stress disorder, someone that's been in a horrific car crash, single point, that's obvious. Of course they're going to suffer with some form of PTSD because that was horrendous. They weren't expecting it. Whereas I'd been trained as a soldier for a long time, and all the while that I'm going and doing those exercises and whatnot, whether I like it or not, subconsciously I am conditioning my brain to deal with extreme situations.
Combat.
So then when it happens, you're like, yep, all good. And I'm going through this whole period, and I don't ever remember there being this one time. Now I could look at it and be like, yeah. That was pretty fucking gnarly. That was pretty hardcore.
Where in the world were you fighting?
Predominantly Afghanistan. Yeah. But what was going on at the same time was I was getting older. I got into a relationship. I got married. I had a kid. My daughter, Mia, she's very ill. She's still very ill. She's born really ill. She's like got learning difficulties, all this sort of stuff. This is all happening at the same time that I'm going away war fighting. I have an argument with my missus. Car breaks down, washing machine breaks down, we ain't got enough money for the bills. It's all that other stuff that I have never been taught how to deal with that actually had an impact on me. And I ended up, after the event, so leaving the military, I was really interested in when, because the thing was, I go all over the place by the way, but...
No, it's just this really interesting.
The therapists in the beginning were always like that. When did you get, what was that moment that you can remember feeling differently? And I was like, there isn't one. It just sort of arrived. But then looking back, I was like, hang on a minute. So I ended up drawing this psychological timeline. So I drew my life, like I was born and I'm here at whatever point we're at. Then I just put other lines in there and I was like, right, career, military, that's pretty stressful. Career courses, you're expected to do well. Tours of duty, kid. Meet someone, get married, child born, ill, in hospital, car breaks down. And basically I suddenly realised, I looked at where those lines were the densest, and I was like, that's when I should have been paying attention to myself. When all this other stuff was, yeah, okay, I'm going away and I'm war fighting, but I was taught to do that. It was the other stuff, coming home from those situations and then finding myself thrown into a scenario that I'd never been taught to deal with.
And like, what did you, and what, when you were, you know, we talk about PTSD, what were you experiencing? Like, if you were going to explain to someone what it is and what it feels what do you feel? What did you feel?
I did my Special Forces Commander's course. It's quite intense. And there's a week of presentations where you just sit through PowerPoint. We all love PowerPoint.
Yeah.
One of those presentations was about what we as leaders should look for in our men with regard to mental health. Now, no one at the time was interested in that lecture because it wasn't going to help us pass the course. It was like it was just a nice to have. And I was sat at the back of the class with one of my mates, and they were going through all these sort of this. They were going through this list of things to look for in your subordinates, and I was like, I'm ticking a few of these. I was just like a throwaway joking comment. I'm ticking a few of these, like drinking a fair bit, going out, can't hold down a relationship. I'd split up with my missus at the time, and sort of put it to one side, didn't think anything of it. Then I'm getting ready to go away for another tour of duty, and this was like, it had been like my sixth at the time.
Well, when was this roughly in terms of time?
This is 2011. So I'm getting ready to go away. I'm a senior guy within a squadron. I'm leading, I'm responsible for people.
Which is a lot of pressure as well. You know you're going into, it's people's lives.
We're getting ready to go away again to engage in 6 months of war fighting. And we're doing, you do build-up training, and it's cool. We're doing all sorts. We're jumping out of planes from fuck knows how high. We're cutting around London with the police, doing all sorts. And I couldn't be arsed. I was like, can't be bothered with this. And I felt like the tour that was looming in the distance was like a black cloud getting ever closer. And I was like, I was having to dig deep to motivate myself, let alone the guys that I was responsible for. And I was like, this isn't fair. This isn't fair on them, let alone like me. So I sort of, what happened was I went into the clinical psychologist department in the unit. So it's called DCMA, I think it's Department of Clinical Mental Health.
Yeah.
No one ever goes to see it. I went in under the cover of darkness because I was like, I don't want anyone to know I'm coming here. Knocked on the door, met the psychologist, said, look, I feel like I've lost my military mojo. Tell me what I need to think about to get it back. And she's like, okay. I said, I don't want anyone knowing I've come and seen you, by the way.
Okay.
So she's like, right, it's off the record, sit down. Went through a few things, and I was like, so what, you know, what am I going to do?
She goes,
no, you're going to have to come and see me a few times. And I'm like, oh, fuck it, okay. So, you know, did this to and fro, and then she's like, look, you've probably got PTSD and you've got a mild form of depression and you're burnt out. And I'm like, what does that mean? She goes, this has to be raised. If you want to fix this has to be raised. And I'm like, So I was like, okay, raise it. Next thing you know, I'm signed off work for the benefit of me. And I'm going through this whole thing and I'm fighting my feelings. I was at home then by this stage. I was in another relationship, living down in Devon. And I wasn't really engaging with the interventional sort of therapy that I was undertaking. And in the end, they were like, look, the thing that will fix you is for you to leave the military. And I was like, no chance. I says, there's no way that's what I want. And they're like, look, but they have to get me to buy into that. I have to say, yeah, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't. I was like, nah. I then went on holiday with my family at the time, and I was the worst person to be around.
What were you like?
I was terrible. What happened was, I went out for a run on the beach, and as I was running, I don't think I've ever suffered from flashbacks, but I was running along the beach. It was early in the morning. As the sun came up, it like threw the ripples in the sand. It made like a weird sort of shadowy pattern, and it reminded me of flying back into Kandahar on the back of a helicopter. I used to sit on the back of a helicopter and look down at the sand dunes, and I remembered it, and I was like, oh, this holiday is just like what I was going to be doing. I'll get back from this run, have a shower, go and have breakfast, we'll do the same stuff, boring as a fat, and I'm missing this thing. And I had this, and then from that moment forward in that holiday, I was an absolute dick. I was like, not nasty, but I was just miserable. And I was like, God, I hate the way I'm having an impact on people. So came back off that, went into work, and I was like, right, you're obviously right. I've got to leave the military. Let's start the whole, and it happened like that. You go on, so I was obviously part of the special boat service, which is basically owned essentially by the Navy. So you go on the naval med board, sit a med board with a load of people that don't know you, and they're like, yeah, blah 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 blah, you're going to leave, and this is your TX date, your transmission date. It's on, they're basically on April 5th 2012. I became a civilian, and I remember waking up on April 6th, and I was like, fucking hell, I feel worse.
And like, you did feel worse.
Yeah, because I didn't belong to anything. And then I went, and then that's when the journey really started, I suppose. And I basically, when I went through that sort of period of that period of mental health and like realizing that it was a thing for me, and then leaving, I forgot all the stuff that I'd learned in the military, all the good stuff that would have actually helped me get through that. I didn't think it was applicable.
Mm. And so what happened then? Did things get worse before it got better? Did you?
Yeah, it got like, home was terrible. I was constantly pressing that red button. Chaos. You know, didn't think I deserved anything decent. And I don't know where that comes from, whether it was like, I don't think I've suffered from survivor guilt, but maybe a little bit, you know, maybe I'm sort of dwelled on that a little bit. I was overthinking everything that I'd been a part of. Had I made good decisions? For me at the time, I was like, what am I doing? Having a massive arguments with my missus at the time. And in the end, I remember having a breakdown. I was crying, driving home, and I detoured and ended up standing on top of a cliff thinking about throwing myself off. And I think it was whether I was going to do it or not, I don't know. Obviously not. It was just something, maybe a process I had to go through.
Well, it sounds like you were really struggling at that time.
Yeah, I was. It was fucking grim when I think about it. When I look back at that period, every day was grey. Mm. It obviously wasn't, but my memory of it is grey and fuzzy. And but the key thing to that cliff top moment was, I was like, I don't particularly like heights, so it wasn't a great thing to be doing anyway. But I was like, well, I either do this and everything goes black and that's it, the end, or, you know, what do I have to do if I walk away to stop this being an issue? And like, the main thing for me at the time was to be honest. I hadn't been honest with myself the whole period. I hadn't really bought into the fact that I was struggling. So every time people were saying, like, do this, let's talk about this, let's look at how we fit, I was like, yeah, whatever. I was basically, like, we spoke about the check-in earlier, I was just fucking ignoring it. And then that bit was the bit where I was like, right, I need to be honest with myself. And I think the other thing with it is, when people hide stuff from themselves, when they're lying to themselves, we get annoyed when we know someone's lying to us. So it must be, it's absolutely super frustrating when we're doing it to ourselves.
Yeah.
Because subconsciously, you're subconscious like that, you lying to
Yeah, you're not being honest.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, yeah, it was just a
period. So you had that moment where you're like, okay, things have to change. What got you? I mean, life's never perfect. It's like this idea of like this arc of recovery that you get better and you never go back again. It's like, I mean, anyone that's experienced mental illness knows that's not realistic. I have dark days and so on. Like, what got you to a better place then, if you like?
The honesty thing, chance, the guy that gave me the job that I didn't like, who when he gave me the job said, this isn't the job for you, but I'm going to use it for what it is. You're going to get paid, you get a car. I was a nightmare for him, but he just stuck with me and he collared me one day. He was the CEO of the car. We're still friends. And he collared me one day. He's like, are you all right? And I was like, no, mate, not really. I'm really struggling. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And he's like, right. And he went out of his way to basically, he allowed me to be a part of his package that he got as a CEO. So he got me private intervention. So I went on the journey to find the right person. I'd met a couple of different clinical psychologists. They weren't really great. And then I met this girl, Alex, from she was based down in Totnes. And she was awesome. We used to go for windy walks in Dartington Woods. And I'm a bit of a hippie. Like, I like the sort of more holistic approach.
And I do my therapy every Wednesday out walking. Me and my therapist walk. We don't
That's
do
what
inside.
We have. No,
I
no.
can't sit inside it. We walk outside. That's why exactly. I do the podcast. We walk and you talk to people. It's great.
Exactly. It was the bit that fixed me was actually just doing something that's normally attributed to being indoors, outdoors, and it was a big, big changer. She taught me the toddler analogy, and yeah, I mean, it's funny, I lost touch with her. Then I wrote Battle Scars, and Matt, who I do the book, was like, we should try and get hold of Alex. And I was like, mate, you'll never find her. Okay. I was like, she's moved to France, she's living in a wigwam, she doesn't have TV. She's like, literally, that's the sort of person she is.
You found her.
He goes, mate, what was her name? I said, oh, it was Alex Toombs. Sweetie. He goes, there's a website here with a number. And for months I've been telling him, we're never going to find her. He goes, there's a number on here for this girl called Alex Legaze. And I'm like, he goes, I think that might be her. Try her number. So I was like, looked at the number, typed it into my phone, pressed send, and her name came up. I still had her number in the phone. And I was like, and she answered. I was like, it's Jay. Anyway, we're chatting. We got, you know, weirdly, we're friends now. But when I re-engaged with her and started talking to her, I said, oh, we met up for, what was it, 5 times? She was like, what? She says, you saw me every week for 18 months. Oh. And I was like,
so your memory of that time is different. You know, that's quite common with actually PTSD, but also mental illnesses, that our memory, we don't remember things very well.
Yeah.
Things become very hazy. Things where you can even forget that you've ever met people.
But it's mad.
Memory loss. People don't realise how much memory loss is a big part of grief and trauma, like not being able to remember people, places, times, or having altered memories of that time.
It's bonkers. Because I was like, I said, oh, we did one session indoors, and I said I wanted to go outdoors. She goes, no, we didn't. She said, we did 5 indoors before you told me you didn't want to be indoors.
Yeah.
I was like, jeez. Yeah. I was like, did you cry? Anyway, yeah, that was
therapy for you made a big difference then? It helped?
Yeah. Talking, going on that journey. Also, what I learned on it was I became very despondent when I thought people weren't the right people for me. It was because, first of all, I wasn't being honest, so refusing to engage properly with whatever, but also understanding that you go on this journey, and it is hard. A lot of people think, it should be easy. It's not. You got to put a shift into.
Well, like therapy, people often think therapy sold as this kind of magical thing. You go and it's so like lovely. And therapy's hard, isn't it? It's hard. When you do the work and you're talking about things that trigger stuff, and you're like, man, it's hard.
It's tiring, isn't it?
It's exhausting. Like, if you're exhausted, it's like a workout.
I get
like
a fuzzy head.
Yeah. Like being in the gym for an hour, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
worse.
Yeah, it's hard. The gym gives you the head. Your head feels good in the gym. So for as we come to end of this part, then for people, we're not glossing this over because we could do 3 episodes on PTSD. What would you say to people that are experiencing? Like, quite rightly, you were saying earlier that, you know, you can have a singular event like a car accident that's caused it, or multiple events. I had a PTSD from my brother passed away. He died by suicide a couple of years ago. I had the pandemic and a few other things actually that tied into it. So there's a few things. Or you can have a prolonged period of exposure to something or lots of things, like you mentioned, that do it. So there's lots of reasons people get it. But what would you say to people that are going through PTSD at the moment? They're actively experiencing the symptoms, whether it's flashbacks, whether it's the mood, whether it's, you know, lack of interest or depression. What would you say to people going through
that? I think the first thing would be that what you're going through is normal. People are like, oh, the thing is, I agree with, we need to know what things are, PTSD and that. But ultimately, all we're doing is labelling what being a human is.
You're saying in the sense that you are reacting to something that's genuinely happened.
Yeah, you don't want to feel like that, which means that is a natural reaction. Yeah. You shouldn't be ashamed of that. And yet we are ashamed of it.
Because we often do demonise the fact that, like, if you see something bad, say, for example, you're standing there and you see a car accident in front of you and it's a horrible car accident, that's going to affect you. But we often feel bad that we feel bad after it, which is an odd thing, isn't it? Because you're human, of course you feel bad.
The funny thing is if you fall off a curb and worst case scenario, snap your ankle, everyone's like, oh, yeah, of course, just fell off the curb. Of course he's going to hurt his ankle. But if you see something or something has happened to you psychologically, we don't accept that that can hurt. Why not? Society's weird like that.
So you're saying kindness to yourself, perhaps compassion.
Kindness
to
yourself, and then understand that you're on a journey that requires a lot of time and effort, and that you've got to go on. Journeys should be fun, they have ups and downs, but ultimately, you just got to go out there and find the right person to talk to. The first 3 people you find might not be the right ones.
But that's not to be despondent about. That's not something to be despondent about.
Does it get better?
I think so. With the right, if you've got the mindset that you are going to fix yourself, I'll never say never. I have down days and I'm, you know, I get upset still. I'm a human, but yeah. I genuinely think I'm in a far better place than I was before I'd gone through this and not known anything about mental health. And I genuinely believe if you want to be in a better place with hard work and being very attentive to yourself, I think that's the right word.
Yeah, absolutely.
You will get there. Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing about that. We'll come to the end of part two. In part three, we're going to talk about why doing hard things is good for us, and we'll talk a little bit about what you've seen from doing the show SES Who Dares Wins, what the kind of benefits have been for people that have pushed themselves and so on. You're laughing, yeah. We'll see.
I just feel bad for the people that come on.
Right, okay, well, we're going to pick up on that straight away. Thank you so much. See you guys in part three very soon. Take care and goodbye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.